Part of what makes Cuba so distinct, so intoxicating, is its sound. Americans fell in love with Cuban music long before the revolution and the Cold War, and there's a lot of excitement about discovering what we've been missing all these years. So what are the elements of that Cuban sound? Steve asked producer Jonathan Overby, host of a world music radio show called Higher Ground.
There's mambo, there's also cha-cha-cha, there's bolero, and there's son. It's a particular type of music that really has a wonderful underpinning of Spanish and African flavors. It grew out of the countryside, it made its way to urban settings, and son grew out of that. It has this elegant texture, like Duke Ellington had in his compositions. There was a sense of grace, there was certainly very classical. You could groove to it, you could feel it, and yet it had this soft, stately drive of the rhythmic patterns unique to only Africa underneath all the music. And plus, music in Cuba is a very intimate part of daily life. I mean, for the harvest, for celebrating marriages, births, even deaths, just the love of life itself. Cubans, as you know, have very little in terms of material wealth. It is the music that perhaps is more valuable than anything because it's really part of their DNA.
You mentioned son, one of the traditional kinds of Cuban music, and we have an example of this. In fact, there's a new CD, and this should excite a lot of people, from the Buena Vista Social Club. Tell me about the CD and this particular track.
Well, it caught me off guard when I first heard it, called Lost and Found, and it's a collection of previously unreleased recordings by the Buena Vista Social Club, now world-famous Buena Vista Social Club with Ibrahim Ferrer, Omar Potuondo, and a bunch of other folks who helped make the group very popular.
And you've picked out one track that particularly suggests this kind of influence of song.
Well, it does. It features the voice of Ibrahim Ferrer, perhaps my favorite of all of the Cuban Buena Vista Social Club musicians. And you really get to hear in this piece the early underpinnings of Eastern music that came out of Cuba where son originated and how it merged with Spanish guitar and African rhythms. And now we see how closely related it is and how celebratory the music is.
Si la libertad no puedo vivir, Mundeleta va con mi corazón, tanto maltratar la fiel del Guiri.
What a voice.
And with his voice, you hear the wonderful Spanish canción, the Spanish guitar influences, the African rhythms, all of these things originating, by the way, some of them from the Bantu region, the African influences. You get to hear why Cuban music is so popular because of this combination of the Spanish elegance, if you will, with the pulsating African rhythms.
Now, when I think of certain Cuban percussive instruments, I think of what, the clave, the maraca?
The clave is so key to Cuban music. I never understood just how important these two sticks are in all of Cuban music. And most of the time, it's a guy, and that's all he plays all night long in the band is claves. So he might go dot, 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 and that's his stick for the entire night.
He's basically just hitting two sticks.
Hitting two sticks together.
Yeah.
But that's the job for the night. Same thing for the maraca player. But it's critical to the rhythmic pattern of the music. It gives it a very distinctive Cuban sound. And then you take the congas and also the bongos. And when you think about the backdrop to how the Africans who were brought to Cuba, they were brought not because they wanted to come there. They were brought there to work in the plantations. And yet they were allowed to express themselves, Steve.
They were enslaved.
They were enslaved. They were allowed to express themselves through their music, which sustained them.
Now, we have another selection from this new, recently discovered Buena Vista Social Club CD, Lost and Found, which illustrates some of these percussive elements you were talking about.
Well, this next piece is a piece that features Orlando Lopez and Anga Diaz. It's called Black Chicken 37. What I love about this piece is it's really focused on rhythm, and it gives you a taste of what the underpinning of Cuban music is all about. Well, this kind of composition is right in the wheelhouse of a jazz musician who loves to ad lib. And this is how trance music sort of unfolds itself. It starts off somewhat quiet in some ways, and particularly as we get to talk about Santeria, you'll see how the musicians become really involved in the line that they're playing.
Now, we've been talking about great Cuban musicians. There are also American musicians who came over to Cuba, and one of the ones I hadn't realized until we were talking earlier was Nat King Cole. He had a long-running gig at the Tropicana, the famous nightclub in Havana.
Well, he certainly did. This wonderful artist, Nat King Cole, iconic U.S. jazz pianist and vocalist, loved Cuba, loved Havana. And once he got to know the place, he said he believed that Cuba was the cradle of music and show.
Did he speak Spanish?
No, he did not. He learned it by rote, all of the pieces by rote. He went to the infamous Tropicana Club in Havana, and it was known for its voluptuous and somewhat risque cabaret shows and big bands, but it also attracted mobsters, movie stars, and musicians. It became a destination for Cole, who from 1956 to 58, I think he performed there three or four times at the Tropicana.
Well, so this is right before the revolution, right before Fidel Castro came into
right
power.
Right before. And he was also the highest paid performer, who at one time held a 30-week contract, the longest in the club's history. So he was asked in 1958, just before the revolution, to record an album in Spanish. He ended up doing three of them. One of the pieces that he did, it's sort of a bolero-like composition called Perfida. It's a very popular Cuban song. Ibrahim Ferrer does an amazing job of this. But Nat King Cole took it on in 1958 with some strings and a bit of pizzicato in the strings and a few other little tidbits of musical underpinning. So here he is with this wonderful song.
Y tú, quién sabe por dónde andarás, quién sabe qué aventura tendrás. Que lejos estás de mí.
Now, one of the unusual instruments that I saw when I was in Cuba recently, speaking of the percussive qualities, was a jawbone of a horse that had been dried out, apparently for months, and this guy was just shaking it.
Yes, often those instruments are mostly used in South America, a jawbone of an ass or a mule. And I've never seen one used from a horse, but...
Or maybe it must have been a mule.
Yeah, it might have been a mule. And the idea is to hear the shaking of the teeth hitting
each other.
And it gives this wonderful shaking sound. They took what they had and fashioned instruments out of boxes. And they have a drum called the bata drum, B-A-T-A. And it has skins on both ends. It's used in big band music. Primarily used in Santeria, ritual expression, but it made its way onto the popular stage. So it reminds me that no matter how much people suffer, they often find ways to sustain themselves through artistic expression, through the voice or through hitting something, banging something.
I want to come back to something that you've made reference to, Santeria, this distinctively Cuban religion, I mean, with roots in Africa, blending with Catholicism, I believe, and has an interesting history in Cuba, doesn't it?
It does. It's a bit of mythology, Yoruban mythology, brought to the New World by enslaved Yorubans. They were indoctrinated with Christianity, if you will, to control them in some cases. And the enslaved Africans mixed music with their expression of their traditions. They embraced Catholicism.
But Catholicism didn't always embrace Santeria.
No, it did not. In fact, I'm still trying to find out the day and time that they actually said officially in writing that they embraced Santeria.
Which is fairly recent.
And with Santeria, there are so many customs within it. There's trance, there's divination, there's a spiritual process for communicating with ancestors and deities, animal sacrifice, sacred drumming, and dance. It doesn't use a central creed for its religious practices, and they take place not in some grand edifice in the center of town or up on a hill. It takes place in Casa de Santos, a house of saints, a local house within a neighborhood.
And you've brought some music to illustrate this tradition.
I did. You'll hear what is, in some ways, like a field recording. It's not overproduced, but it gives you a sense of what a ceremony would be like in one of these Casa de Santos, a house of saints, and how Santeria would be expressed.
Jonathan Overby is the host and executive producer of Wisconsin Public Radio's world music program, Higher Ground. He talked with Steve Paulson.